time seems to be subjective. Sometimes time is moving very, very quickly in our lives. Sometimes it's moving very, very slowly. And I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor in a series called How to Die Trying. We've been talking about things in life that no matter how hard you try, you can't make them go away. We talked about, you know, you can try and you can try and you try, but you'll never please everyone. And then we talked about you can try, you can try, and you can die trying, but you'll never avoid pain. And today we're going to talk about waiting. No matter how hard you try, you'll always have times in life that it's, you know, time's not moving fast enough and you have to wait. So grab your notes. The big idea this weekend is you can trust God's timing, because sometimes my timetable and God's timetable is not the same. And so, you know, and that's when you have to decide, can I trust him? And we're going to talk today about a family in the Bible, goes way, way back, almost to the very first part of the Bible, a man named Abraham and Sarah, and this slave woman that they had named Hagar, way back in the Old Testament, right in the very beginning of the story. And as we read it, it's going to be Abram and Sarai, but we're going to call them Abraham and Sarah because God eventually changed their name. And this family, Abraham and Sarah, they get off of God's timetable for how things are working in their lives. God had come to Abraham and gave him this fantastic promise. They don't have any children, and they really want to have children. In their culture, the worst thing that could happen to a family, the worst thing that could happen to a woman, a man and a woman, was to not have any kids. When you didn't have children in their culture, people just assumed that you'd done something wrong and God was mad at you. And so if you didn't have kids, it was like a big badge saying, you know, I'm a bad person. And, you know, God's not on my side. He doesn't care about me. And so they didn't have any kids at all. And then one day God comes to Abraham. He says, you're going to have a child and you're going to have a huge family. In fact, he says, look up in the sky and see the stars. You could never count them. That's how many kids you're going to have. You're going to have tons and tons and tons of kids, which is great news for Abraham. So he's like, finally, I'm going to be able to shed this reputation as the one that, you know, is the bad guy that, you know, God's against. And so he, you know, rushes right home and tells Sarah the good news. And, of course, they get busy. They're like, hey, we got the green light to have kids. Let's start having, like, trying to have some kids. And so they're like trying to have children. And no kids come. And so they try more, they try more, they try more. And still, you know, Sarah never gets pregnant. They never have any children. 10 years go by of trying. No kids. How do you do with waiting? When you approach a yellow light, do you slow down or do you speed up at a yellow light? Who'd like to spend the afternoon at the DMV? How do you like waiting? One idiot amongst us. Yeah, okay. Well, here's what happened when I went there. I go down to the DMV. I get there at 5 minutes before it opens. I'm thinking, I'm going to get to the DMV early. I'm going to have to wait. I get to the DMV. I get there. There's 50 people outside at the door when I get there, 5 minutes till. I'm like, what? It's dark out, and there's like 50 people there. And let me tell you what, they know exactly how the line goes, too. I mean, you know, and so you, finally they open the door and we all rush inside. Now there's about, you know, like maybe 65 people, and I'm like number 51. I'm like, what? I got here 5 minutes early, and you know, and they have to get everything set up front, and they get you all settled, and so you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait a little bit longer, and you wait a little bit longer, and the line's going, you know, and you're like waiting and waiting, and they only have two employees there, and you're wondering, I paid for this? But anyway, so you're waiting, you're waiting, and finally, you know, I get up to the desk, and I have everything. I have my, you know, my passport and my birth certificate, and I have my driver's license. I've got everything, you know, and I'm trying to be in a pretty good mood because I've been waiting quite a while, and when I get up to the very front, the lady in the, like, the perfect foot, she goes, may I see your utility bill, please? And I'm like, why? She goes, you can't renew your license without your utility bill. Now there's 100 people in the room behind me. And I said, well, I don't have my utility bill, but I have my birth certificate, my driver's license. I know my Social Security backwards. I'll give you my shoe size. I mean, please let me get my license. She goes, sir, step out of line. You don't have your utility bill. And I'm like, ma'am, I live quite a ways away. I'll have to go home and then I'll have to come back. And she said, sir. So I'm like, so I get, I leave. I go all the way home. I get my utility bill. I come back. Now there's like 150 people jammed in here like sardines. And half of them don't speak hardly any English. There's every language imaginable going on. So they're taking a long time at the counter. And I thought, I'm not waiting in this line. No chance, man. So I went over. I don't know if you've ever done this, like when you just totally cut in front of everybody. And you sort of stand in your own line. and you're waiting, and I'm thinking, well, as soon as this guy's done, I'm just going to slip in and say, hi, I'm back with my utility bill. So sure enough, you know, he gets done, and I go and I put my utility bill. I say, ma'am, I went home, like you said, and I got my utility. Sir, you'll have to go to the end of the line. And I'm like, I already waited with 50 people in the beginning. Don't you remember me? I was the one with that utility. Sir, how do you do when it seems like it's unfair that you have to wait? So now, I go all the way to the end of the line, and I'm stewing at this point. And I'm thinking of the letter that I, you know, should write, but and I'm trying to frame it like somehow like it's been not my fault. And I'm waiting and waiting. Two hours I wait as the line comes all the way to the front. And I finally come to see the lady again, and I set my stuff down, and I said, here's my freaking utility bill. And she processes everything. She says, okay, sir, you'll have to have your picture taken. And I'm thinking, this is going to be the worst face of all time for a license, you know. And here's actually what happened. I said, okay. And I don't know if this is why they do this at the, they don't, like, give you any time. They don't say cheese or 1, 2, 3 or anything. So I just went over and I sat down. And as I sat down, I looked up, she shot the thing. And I was like, I wasn't ready for that. I don't want this face on my driver's license. So I turned to her, I said, ma'am, I wasn't ready for the picture thing, and it's probably not going to look right. She goes, sir, you get one photo. And I'm like, one photo? I can't have this face on my driver's license. For 3 hours, I leave with the ugliest picture ever on my driver's license. That's what occurs. Now, I don't know how you are with waiting. And even when you know deep down, that's my fault, I should have done this, I should have done that, but you're still waiting. Abraham and Sarah are waiting 10 years for a child, and they're doing everything they possibly can to have this baby. And at one point, Sarah decides, I can't wait any longer. I cannot wait for God any longer. His timetable is too long. I mean, I gotta have a baby now. We don't use the term barren woman anymore in our culture. But there was a time, and it's probably a good thing, because, you know, like there was a time when if a woman didn't have children, they said she was a barren woman. And it was a way culturally of saying that, you know, a woman is a failure if she doesn't have children. And in Sarah's culture, she was seen as a failure. She was a barren woman. She didn't have any children, and she was seen as a failure. And we probably think, well, gosh, you know, that would be a terrible culture to be in where they would do that to a woman. I'm glad they don't say a woman's not barren anymore. That's not right. But doesn't our culture still define for us what failure looks like? Because in our culture now, if you're a woman and you're not a certain size, you're a failure. See, in Sarah's culture, there was no such thing as an eating disorder. Because for women, it didn't matter what size they were. Because women weren't judged on the basis of their size in her culture, whether they were a failure or not, but it is in ours. In Sarah's culture, they arranged the marriage. You're probably thinking, well, how barbaric. I would never want to be in a culture where somebody picked my husband or my wife. That'd be terrible. You know, I like our way better. Like, we get to pick our own, like, our own people we're going to get married to. But do we really? Because do we really get to pick whoever we want to be married to? Or do we only get to have the person that we can attract? See, every culture defines failure. Every culture does. And there's different things that we think we have to have or we're a failure. One of the things that that Jesus is constantly doing is redefining what culture says to us. Because you can really believe you have to have something, and if you don't have it, you're a failure. And Jesus may not see it that way at all. His culture supersedes any culture that we live in. And Sarah, she can't wait any longer because she feels like she's a failure. And I just wanted to ask the question today, is there anything you feel like you have to have? And the reason you feel like you have to have it is the culture that we live in says if you don't have it, you're a failure. And it's good to check in with Jesus and say, Lord, are we on the same page? Does what my culture says line up with your culture, Lord? And Sarah, you know, she wants a baby so desperately. She has to pick between God and a baby, and she picks a baby. And here's where it says, now Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children. But she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar, so she said to Abram, and the big idea, by the way, is you can trust God's timing. But she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. And circle the word but. Because here's all of a sudden Sarah has a resource. I mean, she's waiting, and all of a sudden she realizes, wait a minute, I have a resource. And it is very easy to use people when you feel like you've been waiting too long. Maybe you've been used by someone before, and it's simply because they felt like they were waiting too long, and they just couldn't wait any longer, and then all of a sudden, you know, you became their answer. And Sarah, you know, she's waiting, and all of a sudden, you know, I have discovered in my life that I am most prone to rush things when I feel like I have a resource, that I can change the timetable based on something. I can push some button. There's something that I can do, some form of control that I have, that now I can rush things to make them happen as quickly as I want to. And that's Sarah. And then it says, so she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. So she has a resource, and then this is easy to do. It's really easy to blame God when things aren't going fast enough. So the first thing is, wait a minute now, there's something I can do about this to speed this up. And then she says it's God's fault things aren't going fast enough. So first one is I have a resource. Second thing is I'm blaming God for, like, I don't have what I want when I have it. And then she says these chilling words to her husband, go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Now just think for a second, in a family, what that must have been like for a wife. Because when you read the Bible, you want to kind of step into it and go, no, wait a minute now. Like, this is a woman and a husband that have been together, you know. And by the way, they're older people now. And she says to her own slave girl, you know, sleep with my husband. That's pretty desperate. And so I can build a family. Man, anytime I start to blame God or I start to think I have a resource, the next thing is I sort of crown myself as king. It's like, well, God and I aren't going to build a family. My husband and I aren't going to build a family. I'm going to build a family. I'm going to take care of it. And look at Abraham. He's great. Abraham agrees to what Sarah said. Shocker. I mean, he's 85 years old, his wife is in her mid-70s, and she comes up and says, I think you should sleep with my exotic young Egyptian slave. And he's like, God works in mysterious ways. That works for me. I mean, who knows, Sarah? You know, everything happens for a reason. And so he's like fully on board. Have you ever allowed someone to make a big mistake because there was a benefit in it for you? Have you ever, you know, you're with somebody at work and they're like totally mad. I'm coming in tomorrow and I'm totally quitting this job. And, you know, you're listening to them. You're like, they're not going to find another job. They're not going to do this. This is going to be a nightmare, a train wreck if they quit their job. And then you think, wait a second. If they quit their job, I'm next in line for a promotion. I get the next cubicle up. And then all of a sudden you just, you know, conveniently say, it's really not my place to say anything. Have you ever watched a train wreck happen and really, like, later you know because there's this gnawing guilt, like, I didn't say anything because I was going to benefit from that. And his wife comes to him, and she has this crazy plan. And Abraham must, you know, he knows Hagar, and he's like, oh, man, that's a young girl. And my wife has given me permission to sleep with her. And she may not get pregnant the first time. Anytime I get off of God's timetable, Abraham completely forgets God's timetable because there's a benefit for him. And he lets Sarah make this crazy mistake. In the original language, the Hebrew, it says that Abraham hearkened unto the voice of his wife. And do you know, if you go back in the beginning, very beginning of the Bible, in the book of Genesis, there was another couple, Adam and Eve. And Eve comes up and she's got this great plan. And she comes to her husband and says, I've got this great plan. And do you know that it's the exact same words in this story? It says that Adam hearkened unto the words of his wife. Hearkened unto the voice of his wife. Same exact. And I have seen something in my marriage, just to talk to married people for a second. Whenever I lose track of my responsibilities with God, it's a big deal for my wife. And you see what happens here. You know, so after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took the Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. So now think about the story, and anytime you get off of God's timetable, now we have a whole other person involved in the story that was never supposed to be in the story. And sometimes people that have power over you will cause you and try to make you be something you're not. Hagar was never supposed to be with Abraham. And Hagar was never supposed to have a child with Abraham. Now we have a whole other part of the story. Now we have another baby coming in. That's not going to go away. I mean, now that you know, when you get off God's timetable, you can open up a whole other chapter of the story that has to occur. In life, when you're going along, and all of a sudden, bam, something happens. My grandparents took me on this great vacation when I was a kid. It's fantastic. We were gone a whole week, and it was a fantastic vacation. And we drove there and drove back, and on the way back, we had to drive like 2 days to get home. And 1 hour before we got home, back to our house, my grandfather's driving the car. The transmission blows in his car. I mean, all of a sudden, we're almost home. It's like celebration. It was the greatest vacation. And all of a sudden, the car just starts losing speed, and off to the side it goes. Transmission's out. He has to call the tow truck guy. We're 60 miles from the house. We have to get towed there, riding a nasty tow truck, all three of us, all the way home. And we get all the way back to the house, and my grandfather comes out, and I hear him. I was kind of a kid, pretty young, and I hear him talking to my grandmother. And he goes, you know what I was doing when the transmission went out of the car? And she goes, what? She goes, I was daydreaming about the money that we had left over from the vacation. She goes, I was just going down the road thinking, God, we had such a great time and we budgeted so well. I've actually got extra money. And then he slams his hand down on the counter. He says, how can a man feel so flush one moment and so damn busted the next? And it was like we had this great vacation. And then all of a sudden, very suddenly, there was another part of the story that always remains. And how would you like to be this baby? Sometimes people get off God's timetable and they stop waiting and then they open up this whole new part of the story. And the part of the story is you. And everybody looks at you like the broken transmission. Like you're the bad part of the story. We had this great story going on before you got here. This great story was happening before you did that. That's Hagar. And that's her soon-to-be baby. They all of a sudden become the bad part of the story because some other people decided they had to rush things. And you might be mad at someone because they did something and they're the bad part of your story. You're like, man, things were going so well and now I have this crappy part of the story that I have to deal with. And you may be really angry at them and be even hateful and it may gnaw at you every single day. It's like, seriously? I have to live in this story now? And God cares about that. You can live in the story that you and other people create, or you can live in His story. Someone may be angry at you. Maybe all your life, you're the mistake we never meant to have. I mean, you might be someone's bad part of the story, and you've sort of lived under a cloud. I've always been. And if that's you, God may have brought you here to tell you, you're not the bad part of His story. But let me say something. If you're willing to take that for yourselves, you have to be willing to extend it to others. Though no matter what they did or what they said, no matter how evil they are and they might be, that God still cares about them. And they're not the bad part of His story. And that's what's happening here. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. Now as it goes on, we'll break it down into three different scenes. It's almost like a little mini movie's going on. And so here's the first scene. It's in your note. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress, talking about Hagar. So now Hagar knows she's pregnant, and so there's tension between her and Sarah. Then Sarah said to Abraham, you are responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now she knows she's pregnant, and she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. And Sarah is a total crack-up. I mean, think about her story here now. Like, she gets her slave, and she makes her slave sleep with this other man that Hagar knows that she can never belong or have this other man. And she gets pregnant, and now Hagar is going to have a child that she knows she never gets to raise. And Sarah's like, I can't understand why she hates me. Have you ever blamed anyone else? Have you ever had somebody that doesn't like you and you've blamed somebody else for it? It's your fault they don't like me. I haven't done anything. They hate me because of you. That's Sarah. Oh, I forgot about the part that I had her sleep with you and get pregnant and I'm going to take her baby from her. I, like, missed that part. It's your fault. Couples can play hot potato with responsibility. Like, she's like, whoa, this is too hot for me, Abraham. You have to have this one. You know, like, couples or friends, like a girlfriend, boyfriend, you can do that. You can kind of play hot potato. It's like what she does is it's pretty hot now in her hand. And she's like, Abraham, this is totally your fault. And she tosses it over to him. Do you ever, like in your relationships, you sort of toss it back and forth? Well, this is your fault. And you're like, I didn't do as much as you did. And you're going to say, wait a second, don't throw this at me. It would have never happened had you not. And all of a sudden, you know, like it's a hot potato, goes back and forth. Like, who's going to be responsible for it? Who's going to take responsibility? And Sarah says, let God decide. And, you know, Abraham, he's not guilt-free in this thing. Listen to what he says. Your servant is in your hands, Abraham said. Do with her whatever you think best. The hero of our story, the father of our faith. What a loser. Which is encouraging. The Bible is so gut-wrenchingly honest. I was thinking about it the other day, and in a way, and I don't mean this in the wrong way, but it seems like God will throw anybody under the bus. I mean, these are the big heroes of the faith right here. I mean, he's writing this book. He could have written them out and just like sort of left that part of their life out. But he totally puts it out there. Here's why. He's not afraid of his image. God doesn't spin his reputation. He doesn't protect his image. He doesn't try to make the church or the godly people look a certain way. And churches can get like that from time to time. They can like want everybody to look perfect, so the church sort of looks perfect. And God's not like that in the Bible. You always get the true story. And so he shows Abraham like exactly how he is and how a lot of us men are. We're like, I do whatever you want. I don't want to talk about it. When anybody says whatever, like whatever, just, you know, they don't want to emotionally engage. And men are great at that. Well, I'm going to sell the house and take all the kids to New York and I'm going to become a belly dancer. Whatever, just don't talk to me. I don't want to engage in the emotion of the problem. Abraham, she's got a baby now and she hates me. This is getting pretty heavy. Why are you talking to me about it? Do whatever you want. And I will say, I know it's painful when a wife hears do whatever you want because I've done it. And you can see the pain in your wife's eyes because she's looking for all the reasons to come together why you got married in the first place. And you're like, I don't want to deal with this. Just like, whatever. You know? He won't emotionally engage in it at all. And he must feel pretty guilty about it at this point. And then it says that Sarah mistreats Hagar, so she fled from her, which would be the normal thing. What the word mistreats means is she beat her. That's what the word actually means. She starts beating Hagar. And you can have two things in life. When people hate you, you can think that if you beat them, it will change it, and it never does. And sometimes the way we beat them is to talk behind their back or undermine them or whatever it is, but it never... When you beat somebody up, it never makes them like you. And then the second thing is that sometimes you can take the beating out on the wrong person. I mean, I could have seen it if she would have started, like, you know, throwing down with Abraham. It would have made a little more sense. Like, why didn't you stop me? And how could you slap with her? And, you know, we don't know. She may have not got pregnant the first time. This may have been going on and on and on and on and on. And she's having to watch this thing. She's really super angry, and she takes it out on the wrong person. And I did want to say something that whenever you're off of God's timetable, you can't wait, you rush, you'll oftentimes take it out on the wrong person. She starts beating this girl, you know, and it doesn't work out for her. And Hagar runs away, and that's so scene one ends with Hagar running away. And turn over your notes in scene two. So Hagar leaves, and she's trying to head back to Egypt, and she's all by herself, and she's pregnant. And so, you know, she's got a lot going on. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was a spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, Sarah, where have you come from?" Circle that. "And where are you going?" That's a great question. Where'd you come from and where are you going? And she probably has a general idea where she came from, but she probably doesn't have any answers for it. She doesn't, like, she has no idea why, like, how did this happen and where are you going? When you run away from something, it doesn't mean you actually have a destination in mind. You know, sometimes you're just trying to get away, but you don't have anywhere that you're going. And when you don't have anywhere that you're going, you can often end up even in a worse place. So if you've been contemplating lately, I got to get away from this thing. I got to get out of here. You know, I am so done with this. You know, like when things are a mess and you're just like, I got to get away from this mess. Clarice got me one of those leaf blower things, you know, the power blower deals, which are awesome. And you have one of those deals. And so I always used to have use a broom to clean everything up. And I had one of the blower things, you know. And so when you mow your lawn and you get all the stuff all over, you just blow it, you know, you just blow it away. You know, it just all goes away. And I vaguely knew that I was basically just blowing it in everybody else's yard. You know, I knew that. It wasn't like I went over to their yard and broomed it up or anything. But I was just amazed at how neat and clean my area looked. You know, and then Clarice comes outside one time, and I've just blown everything, you know, and she comes out, and she goes, "Where do you think everything's going?" And I said, "Away." Isn't that the point? Away. And yet other people, where in your life right now is the answer just, "I got to get away"? That is the answer. I got to get out of this situation. I got to get away from this thing. I got to get out of this place. And that's Sarah. And the angel of the Lord shows up, who is Jesus Christ. The angel of the Lord is the Lord himself. And he shows up and he finds her. And he says, do you have any idea what's going on in your life? And where do you think you're going? And she doesn't have any answers from that. She says, "I'm just running away." And If you're in a spot where it seems like it's taking too long, before you decide to run away, you may need what Sarah had, which was an encounter with the Lord. Because he stops her, and the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count." Probably one of the greatest things she's struggling with is, "I'm going to have a baby." And I don't know if you've ever talked to a teenager that was going to give their baby up for adoption, but you still go through all the stuff as a mother. There's all the bonding. Everything happens physically. You know, that, like, the big time comes where you're going to, you know, you have the baby, you go through all of that, and then they come and they take the baby. And it's gut-wrenching. I mean, whether it's a wise decision or not isn't the point. The point is what you personally have to go through, and Hagar knows that day is coming for her. And let me tell you, one of the things that will make you run faster than anything is when you know something is coming down the road, but it's not coming for a while. She's got 7 or 8 months still to be pregnant and be thinking about it. I wonder what its nose will look like. I wonder if its hands will look like my hands. And then the thought comes rushing in, "It doesn't matter. I don't get to keep the baby. Sarah's going to take it. Abraham's going to take it." And so she's thinking, "I'll just run." And when the Lord shows up, he says, "Hagar, I'm going to make you a promise. You're going to be a mother, but it's not because of those two people and their plans. It's going to be because of me. Hagar, if you can trust me, I know it seems like you have a long ways to go and it's going to be really, really hard, but if you can trust me, I'm going to make you a mother. You're going to be a famous mother. You're going to have so many kids. You're going to have a huge family. You're going to hold your own babies. You're going to count their toes. Hagar, I'll give you a destination. You don't have to run to nowhere. You can run to me. And your destination is you get to be a mom. You get to have a family. It's all going to happen for you if we can do it together. And so, you don't know for sure, because she's thinking at this point, this is just an angel, and should I do it, and should I obey? And waiting will always determine if you're going to obey. And so let's look in scene 3. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. And when you're waiting, sometimes you need to know that God sees you, and sometimes you need to see God. And Hagar gets both. And she must start to figure out that it's not an angel anymore. So somehow she figures it out. This isn't an angel. I mean, angels couldn't make promises like that, and angels don't do miracles. And so this is what she said. She said, you are the one who sees me. You are the God who sees me. She really understands God's in the middle of this thing. And isn't it nice to know, no matter how bad someone screws up his timetable or we screw up his timetable, that he still comes and finds us? He finds her, and she obeys. Then the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. And so she does. And here's what happens. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abraham gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael. And she decides to obey. And any time you're waiting, it will always come down to, am I going to obey God or am I not going to obey God? What we tend to boil it down to is that, will it be for my benefit or not for my benefit? One way of looking at it. Another way to look at it is to just simplify it. Am I going to obey the Lord or am I not going to obey the Lord? And here's the good news in your notes. Waiting develops our spiritual strength. This part of the Bible, even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fail or fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings of eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. And this idea of becoming stronger, there's three different pictures here. And as we kind of wrap up this, we're only here for this week. So we're back in the other place next week, but they have a huge hockey convention over there. So we couldn't meet over there, so we thought, well, we got to meet in church, so we rented this school. We're the first church to ever meet in a school in the Granite School District. About 4 months ago, we went to the superintendent in the school district, and we asked if we could rent a school out in West Valley. And they said, no, you cannot. So all the other schools have for quite some time been willing to rent their schools out, but they don't out here. They didn't. No churches, nobody on Sundays. And so we talked to them a little bit, and they said, but here's what you can do. You can come to our school board meeting, and you can have 3 minutes to talk to the school board and see what they have to say. So Kalani and I went to the school board, and I prepared a little talk, and I stood up and I talked to them, and I basically asked them if they would grant us partnership. Would they be willing to form a partnership, because we all really have similar interests in the area? And so they changed a rule that's been on their books for like 50 years, and they decided to open up on Sundays now for churches. So for the whole area now, not just our church, but any church, they can rent facilities. So we're like the first one to ever do it. Here we are right here. So, but we'll be back over there next week. And so these last three, and then we'll get to our connection cards, three different things. One is soaring. And sometimes when you're waiting, it feels like you're soaring. You'll have like wings of eagles. And eagles, you know, what they do is they get up in these thermal drafts and they're up there and they don't have to flap their wings. They're not even gliding. They're on this thermal thing and they're just soaring. I mean, there's no effort at all. And sometimes when you're waiting, it goes by so quickly. It's so fast. It just buzzes by. And, you know, and then other times, like when your kids are 15 and 16, it just feels like every single day is a trip to the dentist. It's like, why is this waiting so long? How is this taking so long? I can't believe how slow this is going. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes life is just soaring. And then sometimes you can run, and you're running and you don't get weary, and you're thinking, how am I making all this thing together? And I'm like dropping them off at baseball, and I'm like making the dinner, and I'm coming home, and I'm being romantic with my husband, and the husband's like, well, not me. I'm up doing push-ups in the morning, and I'm reading the Bible, and I'm going to work, and I'm assistant coaching, and other people are like, I'm going to school, and you're just like, but I'm working full-time, and you're just like, how am I doing this, man? I am just constantly on the run, but I'm not getting tired. And then there are those times when you can... You're just walking. You're like, really? Is this as fast as this is going to go? I'm just walking. You know, Jesus had these type of things in his life. He had his soaring moments. You know, big, huge crowds would come, and, you know, he would feed 10,000 people with a few fish and bread, and, you know, some special little girl, he'd rise her from the dead, and he walked on water. He's just soaring, and, you know, and then he'd have his running times. He was just organizing everything, and just lots of busy things to get done, and then there was the day that he just walked. It says when Jesus was convicted in court and they sentenced him to death that he walked. Initially, he walked with his own cross, and it was too heavy for him to carry, and so they had someone else carry his cross. But he still walked. And there are those times in life when all you can do is walk, and God will give you the strength to just walk, because he. At that point, is just like us. He needed God's strength to just be able to walk. Because he kept going. And he went to the cross and he made the sacrifice. And our sins can be forgiven. But he didn't run there. And he did not soar there. He walked there. And if you're in a walking time in your life, you're like, crap. I mean, think of Abraham. Everything turns to crap for him so fast. He gets off of God's timetable. I wonder what it was like for Sarah and Abraham when Hagar came back and said, okay, the three of us need to have a talk. God came and got me. He should have seen me. I was like huddled by this little spring in the desert. I couldn't take one, and I hate you, Sarah. I mean, I was running for a long time, Sarah, but then I lost my strength. I was soaring at first to get away from you, and then I ran, and then I walked, and then I couldn't. Then I realized, even though I hate her, and I'm so sad, and I didn't do anything wrong, I couldn't take another step. I was like laying down next to this, like this stream, and this mystery man shows up. He walks up to me. He says, if you will trust me, if you'll obey me, I can still pull this thing off.